everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. It's great having you join me today because these are great conversations where we really get to have in-depth knowledge about topics that make such a difference in our life, and particularly for our health and well-being. So I am thrilled that you're joining me again for another one of these great in-depth conversations. You know, I have been coughing a bit. I'd got a little virus, and suddenly it became a cough, and it became a lingering cough for several weeks. So when I received information about a new book called Cough Cures, I was really interested in it. So we're going to be talking about cough cures, the best natural solutions for acute and chronic coughs with Dr. Gustavo Ferrer. And I know everyone will be really interested in this because we're kind of in the cough season, and the cough season leads to the allergy season, and that leads to more cough. So we're going to be exploring the world of coughing and giving you more knowledge and insight and natural strategies to support you in addressing, well, hopefully preventing, and then if you have a cough, and what you need to do to quickly resolve it. Let me just tell you a little bit about my guest. Dr. Gustavo Ferrer was trained in pulmonary medicine in both Cuba and the U.S. He worked with the United Nations University in South America and led his fellowship training from George Washington University. He later founded the Chronic Cough Center at Cleveland Clinic, Florida. And as part of the National Hispanic Medical Association, he went to the White House briefing to discuss the Affordable Care Act. He's quite a guy, and it's great to have him on the show today. So welcome, Dr. Ferrer.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. My pleasure to be here with you.
And congratulations on your new book. It's a beautiful new book. So you have lots of wisdom that you are sharing in this book.
Thank you. Thank you.
So let's just start by, you know, kind of exploring what got you into pulmonary medicine, and then what led you to, you know, you're a traditionally trained medical doctor. How did you get into the whole world of natural cures and, you know, the ways we can address things like our coughs and overall health and well-being?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Well, I grew up in the hillsides of Guantanamo, a small town in the eastern part of Cuba. And we have, at any given time, the population is about 700 people. We don't have doctors. We don't have hospital. The closest hospital is about 30 miles. And so we have to depend a lot on natural remedies. And growing up, that's what my family did. And my grandma was kind of the healer of my town, and she knew every single herbs and you name it. Every problem that we have, we run to grandma to the rescue, basically. And she, you know, she used to treat everything with herbs and teas and so on. So I grew up seeing grandma doing that, and then I developed this passion for medicine when I'm to med school. In my med school, I have the opportunity when I was wrapping up my last year of training to go and do a pulmonary training in Havana, which is about 500 kilometers or 500 miles roughly from Guantanamo. At that time, unfortunately, they didn't have, it's a government controlled entirely communist country, then they control housing and everything. So I didn't have housing available, but I went on and I lived as a homeless for about 18 months and pursued my passion of pulmonary medicine. And it was there when I realized that many of my teachers, great clinicians, great doctors, and they were telling the patients, don't use herbs, don't use tea, don't do this. But when they were having something, flu or cough or anything like that, they were running to the traditional remedies. So I saw that dichotomy, and it always, you know, was something that I want to explore a little bit more. Came to America, and when I came to America, didn't know the language, learned the language, went to the boards, and then to my residency. And when I landed at the residency, I was dreaming to see, you know, that medicine where the doctor was very compassionate. The medicine that I read in many American textbooks, and I was surprised to find that medicine has changed tremendously. And that romantic vision of medicine that I had quickly dissipated, and started to see that it was more kind of a data, a number, and not an entirely human being. And that has been my quest. I want to try to get closer to people and understand and embrace them and understand their culture. And so that's the origin, basically, of background of writing Cough Cures and getting into the natural remedies. Then my wife was taking care of my kids, George Washington, when I was a fellow at George Washington University, and you know, my kids were toddler at that time. They were running all the time with cough, flus, and all this. And she was running to the pharmacy to try to get something for them. And I realized that everything that she was bringing home, even conventional medicine research, has evidence that they have toxic side effects and problems. So I decided to just pull back to that memories of grandma, and I start building and putting together the evidence behind the natural remedies, and write this book.
So you're practicing as a pulmonary doctor, correct? And you're still practicing at the Cleveland Clinic, correct?
No, I left the Cleveland Clinic a few years ago, and I founded a group. I'm currently the fellowship program director of pulmonary fellowship in Aventura Hospital in northern Miami.
Oh, okay, good. So are you able to practice both aspects of medicine there, working with your natural approach as well as your traditional training?
Initially, it was challenging in the Cleveland Clinic, although they never prohibited that I do that. But, you know, the bylaws somehow didn't explicitly allow it to give this kind of recommendations. But, you know, we lived in South Florida in a melting pot of Hispanic culture, where we know that almost everybody's using something naturally. So it wasn't difficult for me to engage in that conversation with patients. In what I do today, I'm 100% allowed to do it. I recommend my protocols and treatments and herbs and it has been a tremendous change in my life, which I enjoy very much.
Well, it must be very satisfying that you can incorporate what you love to do and what you believe in and bring the best of both worlds, as it really should be, but we don't see so much of it happening right now.
You're absolutely right. You know, this is one of the things that I think I'm a crusader. I believe that there is a way to communicate and get things done, rather than fighting between each other. I believe that we can bring, exactly as you said, the best, the very best of both worlds to our patients and family. And there's a tremendous value in natural remedies that for many years have been kept kind of silenced by different agendas. And you know, but the reality is, and you are an expert in the field, you know this very well, our patients and our families, they're going to the pharmacy, and they're going to the natural health products and buying their own products and so on. So I strongly believe that we as physicians and providers are best should include guiding patients and family and teaching them.
Yeah, well, I obviously believe wholeheartedly in that, and it's wonderful that you're able to do it. So I'd like you to give us a bit of a class, if you don't mind, today. Let's talk about the lungs. Let's talk about the whole, you know, our bronchial issues. Let's start with a, you know, kind of a basic understanding about our lung function, what goes on, because I don't think people really understand so many of these functions of their body. So it's a good place to begin, because then we can jump off and look at the various cough issues, what's driving them, and go to the solutions from there.
Absolutely. You know, that's exactly the way that we have structured the book. You know, the first few chapters we go into, and it's actually easy to read. It was written in a you know, colloquial, conventional language so that anybody can understand it. And I begin with a chapter that I go through the details of the anatomy, function, and why we cough and so on. That's an excellent question, because we cannot understand how to treat it if we do not understand how it works. The lungs, actually, the breathing apparatus begins at the tip of the nose, and there is connection you know, through the channels of breathing behind the tongues and going into the lungs, passing the vocal cords, and then to the main windpipe that we call a trachea. Then the trachea gets divided in a couple of main tubes that we call main bronchi, one going to the right lung and the other going to the left lung. And then all from there, these main bronchi start to taper down and becoming almost entirely invisible, tiny little tubes that they take us to the bronchi, the alveolis, where the oxygen is taken from the nose all the way to these little sacs. And the sacs are the ones that connect to the blood vessels and take the oxygen. So we can have issues beginning in the nose and ending all the way into these distal little sacs as a responsible for cough and any respiratory problem.
So we have, because there are coughs associated with what's going on winter time, where we get the viruses. Like I was saying, I had a virus, and it kind of, you know, I felt tired, and in fact, I slept a lot, you know, no energy. And then that symptom passed, but then I found it was showing up as a non-productive cough. So explain what goes on with our coughs and the different kinds of coughs we have and what's causing these different kinds of coughs.
Oh, that's absolutely great question as well. Is you know, we divide cough in two groups. We call acute cough and chronic cough. The acute group of coughs is usually when we don't have any lung damages, and all of a sudden we develop cough, and that cough usually lasts less than 3 weeks. That's what we call acute cough. The great, great, great majority of the acute cough, in excess of 90%, they are caused by viral infections. Mm-hmm. And they're extremely common during the winter time. Actually, just a few weeks ago, and we wrote a blog, it's actually on my website, and I actually had an interview on Men's Health on the same research. There is a publication that, for the first time, point toward why our defenses go down when the temperature goes below 32 degrees. And when that happens, viruses love that. And they get into our nasal passages and respiratory symptoms, and they create an acute inflammatory process. And that triggers the release of mucus and phlegm, and that's the reason we cough. Now, this acute event, usually the cough should last just a week, but in some instances, because of the temperature, because of many other factors, it can linger, and we start weeping in the posterior part of the nose, something that we call postnasal drip, and that is what triggered this perpetual cough, dry cough, that usually lasts 2 or 3 weeks for the most part. So that is what we call acute cough. And on the chronic cough, all of them begin as an acute, but all the chronic cough, they are totally different. The number one reason for chronic cough is and still, unfortunately, smoking. But if we excluded smoking, then we have 5 or 6 group of things that can give you cough. Number one is usually related to acid reflux. Number two is either or combine acid reflux with postnasal drip and rhinosinus problem. And let's stop for a minute in these two. These two, and that's the reason we have a lot of, these two are probably the largest group that we see today in America. And the reason behind this all has to do with our own history. We're eating more than ever. We eat more meals than ever. And we have more acid reflux than ever. But we also take lots of medications. Americans are great consumers of what is called polypharmacy, taking way too many stuff that tend to alter the normal functions of the stomach, and then we get a lot of acid reflux and so on. And the post-nasal drip is a combination of multiple factors. In some small group of people, it is related to allergies, but in many others, it's related to our own environment. We live in air conditioning or heating system that they suck all the humidity out of the environment, and those dries up the nasal passages, and then it begins a cycle, spiral down of inflammation, and produces lots of inflammation and mucus, and end up in having chronic cough. Again, after smoking, these two are probably one of the most common reasons for cough, and they're usually related to the things that we do. So basically, if we understand the mechanism, it's not difficult to fix it if we have the willingness to do so. Then you have other issues, which are the less amount of the numbers of people having cough, which are related to chronic bronchitis or something called COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which both of them, chronic bronchitis and COPD, are problems as a result of smoking 99% of the time. So all the other group or categories, actually, there are medications. You know, we were talking earlier about off the air. We were talking about people in hospital and in other facilities that they develop suddenly dry cough. One of the most common reasons, and I see this all the time, and my students, they love to find this kind of patients because you can help it quickly, is medications. There are medications that can give you side effects, cough. And so you stop the medication and the cough disappear.
Like what blood pressure medications can initiate.
That's
cough,
correct.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. What other medications are associated with coughing?
Well, actually, they are the medications that irritate the stomachs, all the pain medications and inflammatories, anti-inflammatories. They irritate the stomach, and they can trigger cough, and they can trigger something called non-acid reflux, which is also responsible for some people having perpetual cough. So we usually begin our assessment of the patients looking after those medications, you know, as a possible responsible for the cough.
So some of the coughs are viral in nature, like the one I had, which started out as a virus, a flu-y thing, and then the symptoms kind of morphed into a cough, but it's still viral in nature, correct, as an origin. And then we have some conditions that are caused from bacteria, like I would imagine pneumonia, correct? There are those kinds of infections in the lungs. Am I correct there?
Yes.
So, you know, these terms, walking pneumonia and a double pneumonia, can you just explain what they are? Because, you know, I've had several people who were diagnosed recently with pneumonia who are really surprised that they had that diagnosis.
Excellent question. And in fact, I go in details in the chapter, in one of the initial chapters of the book, into this, because there is actually a lot of confusion even in the healthcare professionals, in the doctors, regarding these terms. You know, number one, I would tell you the diagnosis of double pneumonia in anybody that is outside a hospital, I would question that right away. It is very overused, and in many instances, they are not clear of the there's not clarity in that diagnosis. So double pneumonia, that doesn't mean that you have more pneumonia than anybody else or it is worse. It means that you have a bacteria that has colonized or have invaded both lungs. And people used to call it, you know, double pneumonia many years ago. Today, I agree that very likely we should never use that term, and more so use something kind of diffuse infiltrates or diffuse reasons, because it's responding, diffuse pneumonia, because it's responding to the same bacteria invading the lungs. On the other hand, the terms walking pneumonia was a term very popular many years ago, 30 plus years ago. And it was when we discover a group of bacteria that can that can give pneumonia in young people. And those bacteria are usually, people develop light symptoms, you know, let's say cough, a little bit of mucus, not so much fever. They don't feel extremely bad, but you get a chest x-ray in those patients and you will find that they have and shadows in the lungs that consisted with pneumonia. And because they were able to go around and move around, it was called walking pneumonia. The reality is that probably this is actually a diagnostic bias, because you can have the same shadows in somebody having a viral pneumonia. And because, you know, in many instances we don't do the x-ray, then, you know, we don't see it in most people. So the bottom line is that the walking pneumonia was a result of discovering a group of bacteria, but also the overuse of the chest x-ray that has shown that, you know, people have some sort of infiltrate, because that did not change and hasn't changed the way we treat them. So in essence, you know, those terms are terms that were created because we're using more x-ray than ever, and because we are prescribing more antibiotic than ever. So these are the direct results of using those terms.
So are there times, did I hear you correct, that sometimes pneumonia is caused by a virus and other times a bacteria?
That's correct. That's correct. You know, most of the pneumonias that we know today that people end up in the hospital or we see in practice that they need they need antibiotics or something like that, are usually pneumonias caused by bacteria, the great majority. But during the winter season, when we had the spike of the viral infection, there's a good group of people that can develop pneumonia, and they are viral in origin. That usually happens in elderly patients or patients that have chronic bronchitis, people that have something that predisposed them to develop this aggressive viral infection. And when they get to the lungs are not capable of protecting themselves and then develop massive inflammation. And pneumonia is nothing more than, you know, big inflammation in the lungs. And the virus in that case are responsible.
So is there lab work that determines whether it's bacterial or viral? Or do you just talk about what, you know, their conditions in the season? Or how do you diagnose?
Great question. Excellent question. It is usually a combination of factors. We begin with the clinical symptoms. Usually people have persistent fever, cough, phlegm, shortness of breath, and many times the cough is so severe that they develop chest pain, burning sensation in the chest. And all of a sudden that fever and all that sensation continues past 3 to 4 days, and then becomes 4 days with the same persistent symptoms, and it doesn't seem to be getting better. The patient goes, or the person goes to the hospital, and they get a chest x-ray, and then we see a shadow in the lungs that points toward an infectious process. In the winter season, if we put it in that perspective, a viral pneumonia is the most common cause. So when they get to the emergency room or so on, there is a serology test. There is a test that is done from checking the blood or swapping the nose as well. And we're trying to find response to different viruses that we have in the environment. And what we do is we also culture for bacteria. And if in the culture shows not bacteria, but it shows that there is a presence of one of these, viruses, we then conclude that the very likely reason was viral, the cause of the pneumonia. It's putting the whole picture, the clinical symptoms, plus the X-ray, plus the laboratories and the time that that happens as a cause of the infectious process.
Yeah, it's really important to know which kind it is, because you don't want to give the same treatment. I mean, if it's bacterial, if it's a viral, you don't want to give antibiotics. So you need to know what's the cause to get the best results, and without doing harm to the patient too.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Unfortunately, for the last 40 years, we tend to overdo. We tend to overprescribe mm-hmm. antibiotics for most of this phenomenon. Even before they develop all the symptoms that we talked earlier, we tend to give antibiotics right away. And unfortunately, that has created a tremendous problem. We have a humongous crisis today of overuse of antibiotics. Mm-hmm. The bacteria are becoming resistant to them, and even common procedures or things that they used to be very clean in the past, they are getting complicated. C-sections, appendectomies are becoming complicated, are more complicated today for resistant bacteria than many years ago. And the World Health Organization says that we are very much in apocalyptic time when it comes to antibiotics, because it will take about 10 to 15 years to develop new antibiotics, and we don't have a significant number of them in the pipeline of research. So the bottom line is that we need to educate ourselves, the providers and the patients, how to cut down the unnecessary antibiotics. And by far, cough is one of the most common reasons for unnecessary antibiotics. It's said today that research shows that 70% of the patients that go to a doctor with cough that persists for over a week, they will get an unnecessary antibiotic. 70%.
Wow.
70%.
That's huge. Yeah, that's huge. So before we go into the wonderful selection of natural cures, I want you to just talk about the medications that are available from a chemist, from a drugstore, you know, on the shelf that people go for when they have a cough, to try to suppress the cough, or the cough medicines. What are they made of? I mean, I kind of shudder at those red cough medicines that kids get. Must have lots of, you know, dye, number four dye or whatever in there, as well as sugar. What are we doing when we reach for those types of solutions?
Oh, I'm enjoying this very, very much, because this is, we exactly got in details into the different types of over-the-counter drugs or medication, originated in the pharmaceutical industry. And in my book, I have a table at the end of chapter 5, I believe. Chapter 5, where we highlight each of the class of medications available today as an over-the-counter. But before we dive a little bit into them, if you look at them, you're going to find that we have two or three groups, let's call it big families. One of them is the so-called antihistamine, which that include many people use in children. They're using today and been using for many years something called diphenhydramine, known as Benadryl. There is a second group of antihistamine as well, that they are kind of newer generations. We have there the one that we see in the TV is an advertisement, Claritin, Zyrtec, and all that, Allegra. Then we have another group, which are the one that is advertised for breaking the mucus or expectorants. We have there something called wifenacin as a group or family. And then we have other medications that we call it, they're called decongestant, ephedrine, phenylnephrine, and then the final groups are the ones that have saline and so on. But they are, in the great, great majority of the time, these medications, unfortunately, are combined together in the over-the-counters that we have today. So if we go one by one, in category or family, we're going to realize that the research supporting their value is minimal. For example, the anti-cough medication, the anti-tussive, the former president of the American College of Chest Physicians said repeatedly in 2006 that all the research that we have today shows that this medication didn't work for what they're being advertised. But the sad part of this, that this medication, they're either solo or combined, and these anti-cough medications are usually used by our teenagers to get high. And this is becoming a huge problem. We have many well-known singers and celebrities that they are popularizing this kind of combinations of using these cough suppressant with alcohol and soda and creating all kind of drinks. You know, there is a group in Washington, D.C. that has projected that 3 out of 5 teenagers in America today know somebody that is using this kind of stuff to get high.
Wow.
So it is an issue. On the other hand, many of them are combined with something called acetaminophen or Tylenol, which is the number one reason for liver failure and liver transplant in America. And the reason that that happens is because we overdose. And the reason that we overdose is because the medication comes mixed in all these combination products that we have over the counter. So we have research coming out saying that the Benadryl that we mentioned initially could be linked to the epidemia that we have of Alzheimer's in America today. Tylenol or acetaminophen could be linked to the crisis that we have of increased number of patients with asthma. There are strong studies coming out of Harvard and many other places where they're pointing toward that. So the bottom line is some of these medications or most of these medications available today over the counter, they have significant research pointing toward the dangers of their side effects, the potential complications from them, and yet we continue to use them. You know, just last year, America closed the year expending $7.7 billion cash on respiratory over-the-counter medication. And to me, it's amazing that research shows over and over that they don't work and they have a lot of side effects, but nobody is paying attention to them.
Well, what about the food dyes, the coloring, the food additives or the coloring additives that are in there? Because aren't some of those colored, all different colors are colored red? I think I remember last time I looked at them. Don't they add that to it as well, which can cause all sorts of allergies and reactions?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There are plenty people reporting, reactions from the different type of dyes and products that we put in there. And you know, and one thing that I teach my patients all the time: think about this. If you go to any pharmacy, the pharmacy has in the over-the-counter respiratory product. Just for a second, let's imagine that we're standing in front of one of those shelves. And you're going to find in there all the brand names that everybody knows, Theraflu, this one, the other one. But you're also going to find on sold as a specials, we have a discount special going on for the same equivalent as Theraflu. And if you are in Walgreens, it will have Walgreens name. Or if we go to CVS, it will have CVS last name. And whatever pharmacy, they change and put their own name. And the only thing that they use the same active ingredient, and then they add all these chemicals to have something slightly different. And that's the reason we have registered over 3,000 products today in America for respiratory problems.
Yeah. So the take-home message is, do not go for those over-the-counter solutions. They aren't really the solutions. They have a lot of risk, side effects, and go for the natural options, which we're going to talk about now. Give people all sorts of options and formulas and homeopathy modalities that can actually help. So let's just jump in, Dr. Ferrer, and start sharing with people the things they need to do. Let's start with the first sign of a cough. What do you do there?
Well, when the first signs of a cough, you know, the many European countries' respiratory guidelines, they're recommending today, the very, very first signs of a cough, people should use some sort of a homeopathic remedy. There is an homeopathic remedy that is, you know, it's a bestseller in America and in Europe called oscilloconium. And, mm-hmm. and oscillo tend to mitigate many research points over that or decrease the initial symptoms or actually reduce the progression in time of the acute viral infection. There are plenty of studies backing that up. And this is something that we usually recommend to our patients. But then going into a more holistic
I just
approach.
Want to say, if I can jump in, I love Oscillo by Boron is the company. I use that all the time. I use it the first sign of a cold or a flu, but I also use it preventatively. When I travel and I am going to be on a plane and exposed to lots of people, I always take that just before I travel, because that also helps to strengthen the immune system. So I'm so glad you mentioned that, because it's my one go-to homeopathic when I'm getting anything that looks like a cold or flu, or just preventatively if I'm in a stressful situation.
You're right. You're right. You know, my kids, I introduced Oscillo to my kids few years ago because they don't take anything, and they recommend, they go around and recommend that to their friends all the time because you know, they love that it's a quote unquote sugar pill, and for them, and it doesn't have significant change in taste of flavors of the medications that we give them, and it's great. I use it myself, and this is one of the things that we usually recommend to our patients when the first symptoms comes in. And I do know many people use it like you for preventive when they're traveling and so on. You know, we usually tell our patients, you know, you're developing these symptoms, the first thing that we should do is to try to get a blend of herbs that will help you you know, strengthen your immune system. You know, more and more we're coming up with studies and research showing that it is our defenses, the one that goes down, and then the virus take advantage of that. And this is what the study on the low temperature shows. And the defenses goes down, but they don't go down in everybody. It goes down in those that have, let's put it in a colloquial way, you know, weak defenses in the respiratory system. It could be as a result of, you know, we have significant stress, or we haven't slept well for a while, and all that pile up, and our body responds with, you know, low defenses. So we usually tell our patient, just take a blend of those herbs that you can find in health food stores, and you can take something that has golden sea, echinacea, astragalus. One of those combinations would be phenomenal to help to strengthen your immune system. We usually recommend the combination, the nasal spray that combined saline with xylitol, the clear nasal spray, which is a phenomenal combination that more and more is being used in the respiratory and in the nasal issues by ENTs and by pulmonologists as well. Because xylitol is a natural product that it has antimicrobial effect and is excellent. It's excellent in breaking down this biofilm that is forming the nostrils when we are in the initial phases of any of these events. We usually also recommend having a good probiotic added to the diet if you don't take it regularly, because we need to strengthen our immune system beginning in the digestive system. And if the cough is in, one of my favorites is combining ginger tea with lemon and honey. We found that's highly effective. There are combinations of teas that they include all this, and you can get those in whole food stores, health food stores, and so on. One of the things that is excellent, these initial symptoms is using garlic. Garlic is in a strong antimicrobial. And you can either mince the garlic and saute that and eat it in meals or something like that, or you can buy the capsules. That they are excellent, mm-hmm. and they are available everywhere. We tell our patients to avoid sugar, artificial sweeteners, because they tend to also, you know, bring down the defenses. Instead, they can use stevia or xylitol or raw agave as an alternative. So, and those are good things for any time, even, you know, off seasons. We recommend, you know, good diet that include vegetables and fruits and so on. Keep the nasal passages hydrated. And on the conventional side of medicine, there is a famous study published in one of our journals on where they tested chicken soup, and they found the homemade chicken soup is an excellent immune builder that improved the defenses and mitigate the advancement of viral infection. So every time I talk about this, I tell my patients and people, you know, grandma was right with that one. and it's great. It is great.
You know, I just want to reaffirm what you were saying about the xylitol product called Clear, and I want to spell that because people will never figure it out. It's X-L-E-A-R. And I've had guests on my show who were very knowledgeable about the benefits of xylitol, which I'm a big fan of. And taking this as a nasal wash using the xylitol clear product, the liquid product, but it has amazing ability to go in and clear those sinuses, like you were saying, preventing the bacteria to adhere. So it actually washes out and makes it very difficult for those viruses or bacteria to hang out in the sinuses. And it's one of my favorite products as well to help with sinuses, any sinus issue at all, actually.
It is. You know, I'm actually very interested in creating some studies for xylitol in patients that use oxygen and patients that travels a lot. Because, you know, the Japanese, and we put some of that in my book, in the research part, Japanese have done a study where they're using for flights that goes beyond 3 hours. They compare doing nothing versus gargle, which is sailing, salty water. And they were able to decrease the transmissions of viral infections and people getting sick on the airplanes when they travel. I'm very interested in testing this xylitol. I use it when I travel, and I have found that it's excellent. Because the airplanes, the cabins are pressurized to 3,000 feet above sea level, and they tend to have a really dry air. And the potential for transmitting problems or viral infections in there is higher. So this is also one of the products that we really like.
So is that because when you are in a really dry environment, your mucous membranes tend to dry out and they're not as protective against what may be breathed in to them?
That's exactly right. You know, in the cabins in the airplanes, they recirculate the air. And by recirculating the air, although they have excellent filters, there's still the possibility of recirculating an air that becomes drier and drier over time. And that can dry the mucous passages and open up windows for bacteria or viral process to get into our system, break through somehow, and develop acute inflammation that can trigger either acute infectious process or can trigger even bacteria can take advantage of that and build up acute infectious process.
Yeah, that's great. So, okay, so we have some great ideas here, taking some. I always love the warm hot water, actually, with ginger, little lemon, little honey. That's just such a healing food, and especially beneficial at the first sign of a flu, virus, cough. Anything else that you would recommend people do when they notice that something is going on? Do you have any other homeopathic remedies that you like, or any other supplements?
We talk in my book about other homeopathic remedies. I usually tell my patients also to consider a blend of vitamins at this time. Respiratory research, even in the conventional medicine, in the last 2 years, had looked into the lung's response to low vitamin D. We lived in houses, no exposure to the sunlight, and we tend to develop low vitamin D, and the lungs are one of those that respond, with weak immune system. So we usually recommend our patients to take some vitamin D3 at appropriate doses. We also talk about adding magnesium. Magnesium has been used in pulmonary medicine for many years to open the bronchi and make people breathe better. So we recommend, adding some magnesium to the supplements that people take. So kind of in the book, we're going into tailoring this specific supplements for this type of crisis. I'm very much a fan of juice and green juicing and so on, because I found it highly effective and I had seen great results in my patients. So I recommend to, instead of using a toast during those days in the morning, either you grab your cup of tea, but make, a good shake or juice that include, kale. It has a lot of vitamin C, a little bit of berries, something that will give you an extra to help your body protect in those times of, acute viral infections or acute respiratory issues.
So, Dr. Ferrer, do you have, out of your experience with herbal medicines and homeopathy, recommendations of what strengthens the lungs in general? Are there certain herbs that strengthen the lungs that we should know about, or certain foods? What do you recommend?
That's a great, great, great question. In fact, it is actually part of one of the chapters in a follow-up book that we will write during the summer, respiratory wellness. And we talk about specific foods and things that they are helpful for the lungs. There's nothing in terms of lung functionality, and we talk about that in cough cures, than the exercise, breathing exercise. We are very much proponent of Buteyko. I don't know if you're familiar with Buteyko breathing exercise. They're easy to do. But there are many other systems of breathing exercise that they're excellent. We spend a lot of time sitting down in offices and not moving much, and we tend to hold our breath and we don't know that we're doing so. And by doing so, we build carbon dioxide, and that carbon dioxide can be a problem. And we try to, help people understand how they breathe and strengthen the lungs by using breathing exercise added to their normal routine of exercise or cardiovascular exercise. Breathing exercises can be done through the day at work in any place. So we are very much proponent of that. One thing that I do, and I put it in the book, I have not a lot of evidence for that other than a lot of friends that they do it. Okay, and this is totally personal. I want to clarify that. But every time I have something vital coming up, I go for a run. We do know that you have endorphins and some of the other things that goes up when we run or do some exercise outdoor. And to me, that's highly effective. I go for jogging or running, and it feels great, and tend to dissipate or stop anything that may be building. But in general, we insist that people continue their routines of exercise, and if they are tired, it's important to take rest, to sleep well. Sleeping, we also talk about sleeping in the book, because it's part of the repair system created for us. and we cannot ignore that. So we talk about natural ways to improve the hygiene of our sleep, but we also talk about some natural remedies and herbs that we can take, teas and so on, that will help us ease the transition to a better sleep.
Yeah, sleep is such a healing balm, isn't it? Just to have really good quality sleep supports the body's ability to heal and repair. It's so fundamental to our well-being.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, when we're coughing, it often impairs our sleep, which is then that vicious cycle. So you can't really get into that healing depth of sleep, and your body isn't really able to recover as well as it could. So I suppose, doing some meditation, having a nice warm cup of tea at night, calming down, just to support, take some of the homeopathic remedies or some of the recommended herbs and things in your book, really gets people into a place where they can calm down, get calm their system down. And I love magnesium for that reason, actually. I think we're all so deficient.
That's exactly
in magnesium.
Right.
So by relaxing and opening up the bronchioles, as well as, of course, relaxing many other muscle systems in the body, it's really amazing mineral.
It is. It is an excellent mineral. It is an excellent mineral.
And, we have a few minutes left. What didn't we cover that you think we need to know, Dr. Ferrer?
Well, I wanna talk. There's always wonderful things that we can talk about, but one of the things that is been in my heart lately, and I have spoken in the last 3 weeks almost every other day in radios and TV shows, and I tell people, we need to continue to raise the awareness of the electronic cigarettes. Anything that we inhale will eventually give us damage. And I continue to see more people coming to our office and the hospital with developing respiratory problems and cough being at the center of the side effects from electronic cigarettes. So it's important that, families, we all know this. It is usually in teenagers, the one that are using the most, or young people. So we need to help them and educate them. And if they want more information, my website is full of blogs, videos, where we try to incorporate all these techniques and teach patients and family what to choose. We have videos on the top 5 homeopathic remedies for kids and adults that we recommend, top 5 conventional remedies with their specific reason why. We have videos explaining what's pneumonia, what's this bronchitis or flu or so on. They can go to my website, GustavoFerrerMD.com or CoughCures.com, CoughCuresBook.com, clarify that, CoughCuresBook.com, and both of them will take them to our media handle, and they can learn a lot through the things that we put in there.
Well, you've given so much great information and put together great educational material. I think that's fantastic. I encourage everyone to go and visit your site. I encourage people to pick up your book, Cough Cures, The Complete Guide to the Best Natural Remedies and Over-the-Counter Drugs for Acute and Chronic Cough. So whether you are dealing with a cough from a flu, whether you're dealing with a cough from allergies, whether you're dealing with coughs from too much smoking, whatever it may be, they need to understand how the body can heal and repair and get those conditions under control. And, if we don't look after our lungs, and if we don't take care of this incredibly important function of the body, you just don't have the life force and energy to function in your life. Your lungs are your life, your tree of life, actually. And we really need to take care of them and nourish them and learn how to make them strong and healthy. So it's wonderful work that you're doing, and I certainly appreciate having you on the show. It's just been a delight. I just wish you the greatest success with everything you're doing. Before we go, we mentioned my favorite homeopathic, and I want to let people know what it is, because they may not find it if they don't know how to spell it. So we talked about this homeopathic that I and you call a psyllo because it has a really long name, and it's just easier to call it a psyllo, O-S-C-I-L-L-I-O, psyllo, by boron. And really, all health food stores have it. I think even drug stores may have it these days. And it's something you always want to keep in your medicine cabinet because the first sign of any cold or any flu, or if you're going on a long trip and going to be stressed out and a bunch of people, just take it to strengthen the immune system. Like you said, it's the number one, isn't the number one selling over-the-counter homeopathic solution in, is it in France where it is
really
popular?
It is. It
yeah,
is.
Isn't that amazing? Here you have the most effective, safe, non-toxic option, you know, popular in France, and most people have never heard of it here.
That's right.
So we're trying to spread the word. Let people
there you
know.
Go.
So again, thank you, Dr. Gustavo Ferrer, for your wonderful work, for a great conversation. I really appreciate it. Pick up Cough Cures. Go to GustavoFerrerMD.com for more information as well. And I just wish you all the best.
All righty. Thank you very much. And thank you for having me. I truly enjoy being here with you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And for all of you listening, thank you for joining us for another opportunity to get empowered with truthful information so you can make the most informed decision possible for your health and well-being. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You have been listening to What Women Must Know. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.